Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Greer putting the ball on a play. He gets it out deep and Havlicek steals it.
Who's going to guard Karl Malone? Barkley. They got Akeem on Antoine Carr.
Russell will inbound at half court.
Uh-oh.
Stockton, open three. Hit it! John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Name Change Pending. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Name Change Pending and subscribe to get the newest episodes of the podcast and to check out photos of hosts Josh Keel, Tommy Jerone, and Brian Preece as we travel the continent to do what we love, watch sports. Also, I know you've got a lot going on today, but if you could take 2 minutes out of your busy schedule to give the podcast a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice, we would greatly appreciate it. Those algorithms can be tricky, and all I know is that 5-star ratings jump us up the lists. So thanks for tuning in, and now back to the show. Welcome to Name Change Pending. This is your host, Brian Preece. You can find me on Twitter, at bpreece24. I'm joined today by Tommy Jerone. Tommy, how you doing?
Doing good. You can find me on Twitter, at Ruthless_Lupe. That's RUTHLESS_LUPE.
Bow, 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 bow. We still don't have any listeners writing in with some bars for you, but we're working on it. Don't worry. So the today we're going to be talking about the Jazz last couple games, the Lakers on Friday night and the Kings on Saturday night. Before I jump into that, I kind of wanted to read a paragraph from a rather famous book. I think it epitomizes these two games. So we'll start with A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times.
By Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens in the house. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way. I'm wondering if I'm the only one that felt this way, watching the Lakers game Friday night as far as the despair and hopelessness compared to the Kings game last night. Purple Mountain jerseys are back. A lot of nostalgia in the arena. Tommy and I went to the game, and it was everything Jazz fans were hoping from this team, wasn't it, Tommy?
Yeah, it was. You know, it was fun. It was a fun night. I mean, the Jazz did what they needed to go do. And
yeah, it was fantastic. So we're going to talk about both of these games. We'll talk about the Lakers game a little bit more briefly. It was a frustrating performance. So Jazz came out in Los Angeles. It was the Lakers' home opener. Technically the home opener. They played the Clippers at Staples Center, but it was on the Clippers' home court, Clippers season ticket holders, so not quite as many Lakers fans. So Bron and AD, their first home game of the year with the Lakers. Jazz came out just listless. They had no energy. Frankly, they just couldn't get out of their own way all night long. They'd hit a couple shots and then turn the ball over four times. The Lakers' defense was the only word I can really use to describe it was pesky. They were active. They got hands on a lot of passes. They forced 23 Jazz turnovers and blocked 9 shots, which is something I think Jazz fans would expect from their defense a lot more than they would expect from the Lakers. And then, you know, we moved to Saturday night, like we talked about, Tommy. It was the polar opposite. Saturday night, Jazz were hitting shots. They were forcing turnovers on the defensive end. They were active. They were having fun. They looked like they enjoyed basketball, whereas Friday night, we've had those games, Tommy. Both of us have, where we might love the game, but I don't want to be on the court anymore today because this is terrible, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's frustrating. It's something that happens. Let's dive into this Lakers game a little bit. So the Jazz just got outplayed on both ends of the floor. Lakers won 95-86. They led by as many as 22 points in that game. A lot of national pundits have the Lakers near the top of the Western Conference, a contender to represent the West in the NBA Finals. I'm not necessarily as high on them, but the way they looked Friday night, yeah, they looked really good against this Jazz team. I mean, it wasn't a pretty game from either team, especially early in the game. That first half was rough to watch. I'm not sure if you had a chance to watch it, Tommy.
No, I didn't get a chance to watch the Laker game.
Okay. You said you were checking out some of the stats and stuff following it, and it just...
Oh, it just looked like, I mean, from just even from what Brian was telling me about the game and how the Jazz were turning over the ball, and then plus the final score, like nowadays in the NBA, teams are scoring, even the bad teams are scoring over 100 points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it's a competitive game, like you're getting past 100, neither team got over the 100 mark, didn't make it to 100.
Yeah, 95-86 was like a 1997 game.
Yeah, it was so, I think both teams struggled, and then I guess the Lakers, in a sense, just struggled less. And
yeah, pretty much. So at one point late in the first half, the ESPN announcer Ryan Rucco made a comment I thought was pretty funny. He referenced the game as a frenetic slop fest, which really was the best way to describe it. Both teams turning the ball over. Late in the third quarter, the Jazz had as many turnovers, 20, as they did made field goals. So when it's late in the third quarter and you have as many turnovers as field goals, you know you're having a bad night. I mentioned those 23 Jazz turnovers. The Lakers scored 22 points off of them. They had 14 steals. So, you know, turnovers are bad no matter what. But live ball turnovers, those steals that the Lakers got, really put the Jazz in a bad position, forced them to be in transition defense a lot of the night. And that's an area, as good as the Jazz defense have been over the last couple of years, transition has been a spot where they've struggled. So yeah, transition defense struggled, put the Jazz behind the eight ball to begin with. In the half-court set, the Jazz defense was still pretty good. They limited the Lakers to under 40% from the field. Lakers only shot 30.8% from the three-point line. Those are numbers, as Jazz fans, you would always like to see. That 95 points is a number you would always like to see. Like you were saying, Tommy, that's a low-scoring game for the NBA these days. If the Jazz had hit shots like they're capable of, then that's a game that they could win. In only 31 minutes, LeBron James torched the Jazz, had 32 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds. It was rough. It wasn't fun to watch. LeBron was able to get whatever he wanted on the offensive end, facilitating well, getting some easy baskets for Anthony Davis. Troy Daniels lit the Jazz up, hit 4 threes on him. It was just frustrating, and the wheels really fell off late in the third quarter into the fourth. Offensively, I've mentioned the Jazz struggled to get anything going all night. Their ball movement was lacking. Players were indecisive. When they did move the ball, the Lakers were getting their hands on everything. Mike Conley continued to struggle. He went 3 of 11 from the field, 1 of 5 from the three-point line. The first three quarters offensively were particularly bad for the Jazz. They scored 17, 20, and 18 points in each quarter. They had 37 points at halftime. So put that into perspective a little bit. Saturday night, the Jazz scored 35 in the first quarter and 31 in the second quarter. Went into halftime with 66 points. Now, that's a lot. You're not necessarily looking to score 60-plus points every half, mm-hmm. but 37 points in a half compared to 35 points in the first quarter just shows how bad the Jazz struggled on Friday night.
Now, do you take into account that it's the type of team they were playing? I mean, from between the Kings and the Lakers, like...
Oh, absolutely. I think the Lakers defensively were fantastic Friday night. Are they going to be that good all season? I'm not really sure. They were definitely hyped for opening night. They've got the Jazz coming in. Jazz are a good team, predicted to also be a contender in the West. So the Lakers were up for that game, whereas the Kings are a dumpster fire on defense. The Jazz got the blender going a lot last night, but they just had open looks all over the floor, looks that they didn't get against the Lakers. So, yeah, there's a reflection of that, but the Jazz also just missed a lot of shots against the Lakers.
Well, they also, against the Kings, they also had Bogdanović.
Bojan! Mm-hmm. Ooh, that was fun. We'll get into that. Oh, that was so much fun watching that game last night, and Bojan in particular. So as a team, the Jazz shot 41.4% overall, only 32%. From the three-point line, they went 8 for 25 from three, and it's just not going to win you a lot of games, no matter what you do. The Jazz starters finished the game plus-minus-wise. Mike Conley was minus 14, Donovan Mitchell minus 3, Joe Ingles minus 9, Rudy Gobert minus 2, and the only positive number from a Jazz starter was Jeff Green at plus 2. So, I mean, it wasn't the Jazz night. Overall, I would say this: it was a frustrating, disappointing night for the Jazz and their fans alike. But that leads us to Saturday night. We've mentioned it a few times. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back and discuss that Saturday night game against the Kings.
Yeah, 10 minutes. Perfect. That's exactly how I wanted to hit the Lakers game. So we'll do the Kings game, and then just talk about some of the overall numbers through three games. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So welcome back to Name Change Pending. This is your host, Brian Priest, joined today by Tommy Jerome.
Hey, how's it going?
Tommy and I went to the Jazz-Kings game last night at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Purple uniforms are back. Personally, I don't know how it felt for you, Tommy, but when we first walked through that tunnel and I saw the court for the first time, it really took me back to the late 90s, early 2000s teams, watching games with my brother and things like that. It was a lot of fun. It was really cool. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I thought it was a nice little change from where they were going. I always liked the original logo, like with the mountains and everything. Those were my favorite jerseys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of Jazz fans would say
and
that.
And then when we went through that ugly uniform phase where they were changing every year. Oh. We had those baby blue, god-awful Utah Jazz jerseys.
Fair.
Then then it got better. Jazz logo kind of came back, kind of went old school, and now we're like, mm-hmm. Now we're back to like my favorite uniform that was ever worn.
Yeah.
I hope they do not bring back the black and brown ones, though.
You didn't like those copper ones?
Oh, God.
I think they only used those for 2 years. I don't think anybody really liked those.
Those didn't take?
They're selling them in the team store right now, though. We could go pick you one up.
Half off?
I bought a Brian Russell black and copper jersey. For the life of me, I couldn't tell you where it ended up. But I think I spent like $8 on it once. Probably got it from the DI. Steal of a deal. Brian Russell was my favorite player growing up. He and John Stockton, so... What can I say? Well, let's talk about this Kings game. So the Kings came out, got out to a 6-2 lead. Jazz were struggling a little bit. You mentioned, Tommy, later in the show we're going to talk about the Jazz defense and some of the things we've been seeing. They were giving up open looks. Dwayne Dedmon hit a three in the corner. Buddy Hield in the Kings' first possession hit a wide open three at the top of the key.
It just looked like no one was fighting over screens, or they weren't. I don't know if whatever they had defensively going, I feel like there were a few discrepancies. And so that's why, like, the Buddy Hield shot at the top of the key was wide open. No one fought through that screen.
You know what, though? So I rewatched the game this morning, and it's something that you don't see as much when you're at the game, but when you watch the replay, you'll notice things. Donovan, it looked like as Buddy Hield came around a screen underneath the basket, Donovan got a knee to the thigh. And so he was limping around for a couple possessions, but that's what slowed Donovan down there. Still, it was an open shot, and you'd like to see your defense be able to switch on that and recognize it quickly and at least get a hand up on the shot. Didn't happen, you know, whatever. Kings go out to a 6-2 lead, and then the floodgates opened. Jazz went nuts. They went 6-8 from three in the first quarter. The wealth from those threes was spread around. Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, and Bojan Bogdanovic all hit 1-3. Joe Ingles had 2 threes in the quarter, and that's 2 Joe Ingles threes after he attempted only 2 shots the previous night against the Lakers. So obviously a big difference. If Joe Ingles can be scoring and facilitating, this Jazz team is going to be tough to beat at all times. After one quarter, the Jazz led by 10, 35-25, and through the second quarter, they really never looked back. After they took the lead, started hitting some threes in the first quarter, they increased the halftime lead to 25, leading 66-41 going into the break. Tommy, tell me about Bojan Bogdanovic.
Guy's a baller.
I told you. I watched him for 2 years saying he was going to be perfect for this Jazz system.
Yeah, out of 9 three-point attempts, he made 5 of them. 10 for 18 is just overall field goals.
Yeah. So,
I mean, he had, I think, as so far, out of 3 games, his best game for the Jazz.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. He didn't play in the Lakers game, which I think made a huge difference.
He just looked fired up against the Kings. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even then going into it, he was plus 32. His plus minus was plus 32.
Which is off the charts.
So he was just, I'm lost for words. Like, he just... played a hell of a game.
No, he really did. Bogdanovich scored 12 points in the first quarter, hit several layups, had a couple and ones, hit 1-3 from deep. And then in the second quarter, he continued his hot streak. He had 3 more 3-point shots in the second quarter, 11 points, went into the half with 23 points. Like you said, he finished the night with 26, but he set the tone early with his play and his fire. Like you mentioned, you could tell he was ready. He was up for that game. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun to see. Jazz fans also saw a little bit of that real Mike Conley that we heard so much about over the summer. Conley came out. He had he went 5 of 11 from the field, 2 of 6 from the 3-point line, finished with 12 points, 8 assists, 3 rebounds. And as a primary ball handler facilitator for the Jazz, he only had 2 turnovers. So that's pretty hard to sneeze at. 5 of 11 from the field, definitely not his best night, but compared to what Ricky Rubio would give the Jazz on a regular basis, I'll take 5 of 11 and 12 points and a threat from the 3-point line, even if he's not making a lot of shots. You mentioned Bojan was plus 32 on the night. Conley was plus 36. So it just goes to show how dominant the Jazz were throughout the night. We talk about the plus-minus. There was only one Jazz player, Stanton Kidd, who finished the night with a negative plus-minus. He finished at minus 3, but he only played the last 7 minutes of the game when it was garbage time. So you really can't put that into context. As a team, the Jazz shot 56.4% from the field, 48.6% from the 3-point line, and made 18 of 37 3-point attempts. At one point before before garbage time, they were like 18 of 32, I believe. You're not going to beat any team shooting 18 of 32 from the 3-point line. The Jazz, 18 threes was the third most threes in a game in franchise history. It was done 5 times last year. And then the other two were 19 and 20 threes made in a game. 20 was made twice last year, and 19 was done twice last year. So obviously it's a different Jazz team than fans remember growing up, I think. At least than I remember growing up. Another thing, too, that I really liked when I was looking at the stats, not a single player on the back end of a back-to-back played more than 26 minutes. Donovan led the team with 26 minutes, and nobody else played more than that. In the NBA, with the frenetic pace that teams play at these days and as hard as teams play, I think that's awesome for the Jazz. Really happy to see that they didn't have to extend themselves too much on that back end. And then, you know, the last thing about this game specifically, I was kind of surprised, and I honestly didn't realize it in game. I think, Tommy, you mentioned it at one point quickly, but the Kings starters were pulled with 8:39 left in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't come back out.
I don't think any of the starters besides Dwayne Dedman played over 25 minutes, it looks like. Harrison Barnes only got like 22. De'Aaron Fox got 20. Buddy Hield only got 20. And then Bjelica. Did I say that?
Nemanja Bjelica.
Bjelica only got 17 minutes. So they were. And I just want to point out, too, just with the little time that they played, how bad their plus minuses were. Like, Harrison Barnes' plus minus was minus 32.
Oh, my.
De'Aaron Fox, minus 27. Buddy Hield, minus 29. So these guys.
I mean, and you mentioned De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield. Those are two up-and-coming stars in the league.
Yeah, and they just didn't. I mean, I still think De'Aaron Fox is unguardable.
His quickness is.
It's ridiculous.
You're right, especially in the open floor.
Like, you're going to have to run, though. Yeah, he couldn't really get in transition. They really slowed it down. I remember when we were at the game, there was a point. I think De'Aaron Fox got a rebound. And then I looked up, took a drink of my Sprite beverage, and then he was on the other side of the court.
Yeah, you did.
I was like, what happened?
Hold on. In that time, it took us to say 3 words. De'Aaron Fox just got a layup attempt.
And a foul. I was like, kid, I think once they figure whatever is going on in Sacramento, this team could really be dangerous. I mean, Buddy Hield finally should be playing with, better attitude now that he got 3 mm-hmm. years, $90 million.
Yeah.
So I think they just need to get Marvin Bagley back and maybe they'll be decent.
And that's it. That's really what it comes down to for the Kings. Defensively, what I saw last night, I don't think they're going to be good no matter what they do with the personnel they have, but they need Marvin Bagley to be successful. And that it was honestly frustrating to watch. The Kings are a team that I was kind of excited to watch, and De'Aaron Fox is a player I hadn't seen in person yet, and it was disappointing, to say the least, as far as watching the Kings, but watching the Jazz, whew, that's the team I was expecting to see this season. That's the team I think we will see more often than not. They've been a lot better defensively than I expected them to be. So we'll take one more break, and then when we come back, we're going to look at some of the numbers the Jazz have put up over the first three games of the year, 2-1-1 record. Thank you for joining, and name change pending. We appreciate you joining us on Name Change Pending today. Make sure and jump on Twitter. Follow your hosts, Brian Priest, at bpriest24, Tommy Girone, at ruthless_lupe, and Josh Keel, at rise and shout. Also, we know that you're busy, but if you could take 2 minutes out of your day and give us a 5-star rating on your podcatcher of choice, that would be so amazing. Help us move up those algorithms. I don't totally understand how they work, but I know with some 5-star ratings, the podcast shows up higher on the lists. And we want to help other people find the show, don't we? Doesn't really matter what you say for us. Maybe suggest some new verses for Ruthless Lupe. But thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for more episodes of Name Change Pending. Brian Priest here, joined by Tommy Girone.
Yep.
Just got done talking about the Jazz games against the Lakers and the Kings on Friday and Saturday night. Now we're just going to look at the first three games of the year, a few of the numbers, some advanced metrics. Tommy, you had a question for me about Rudy Gobert last night. What was that?
What's up with him? Like, that's the best way I can explain it. Like, he doesn't seem, I mean, it's the beginning of the season, so I shouldn't be too overcritical, but I feel like just looking at his numbers here over the past three games, he hasn't averaged even 10 points. He hasn't made it past 10 points.
Yeah, he hasn't scored in double figures yet.
Only against OKC did he average double-digit rebounds at 14. I mean, even his blocks are kind of diminished. Like, he only has had 2 blocks this whole season. Why would I say... I crack myself up when I'm like, this whole season, he's only had 2 whole blocks.
Oh, cut him.
Cut him.
Max contract.
God.
No way.
Trade him. But it's just a little concerning. Granted, I think he just needs to get going. Did he come? Maybe it's a in shape thing. You know, maybe
I'll tell you from seeing him in practice, it's not a matter of being in shape. Rudy is in tip-top condition.
So what could it be then? What do you think?
Okay, so you talked about the raw numbers. The most rebounds he's gotten in the game was opening night against OKC with 14. He's yet to score in double figures. He only has 2 blocks on the season. But so what I'm looking at is the eye test. When you watch Jazz games so far this year, the 3 games that they've played, when Rudy Gobert is on the floor, that is still an elite defensive team. Yeah, he's only blocked 2 shots, but the amount of shots that he has, you know, forced indecisiveness on, the amount of shots that he has changed near the basket is off the charts. Defensive rating so far this year, again, like we said, only 3 games. This is the whole theme of this segment is going to be small sample size. So how much weight do we put on these numbers? Honestly, not a whole lot. But we look at the defensive rating for the Jazz. They lead the league with a 91.9 defensive rating. So per 100 possessions, the Jazz are allowing less than 92 points per game. The league average on that is about 100, 101, 102. So if the Jazz are going to hold their opponents to 10 points below league average, I'll take it. I'll take it every day. And Rudy Gobert is the reason behind that. You look at the offensive numbers, he hasn't scored in double figures yet. Correct. But if you look at the 3 teams that they've played, the defensive style, and honestly, this is going to be kind of a running theme for the Jazz this year, is the 3 teams, the Oklahoma City, the Lakers, and the Kings, have all dropped their big men. Rather than coming up and hedging on screens and going out and finding shooters, they're dropping the big man to take away Rudy's pick and roll when he rolls to the basket for that lob pass that Jazz fans love so much. Rudy, I think he's only gotten a couple of those so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still making a huge difference. His gravity on the offensive end is what has allowed guys like Joe Ingles to get open looks in the corner. Royce O'Neal with a lot of open shots. Bojan Bogdanovic last night with 5 3-pointers. a lot of that is due to one, good passing, and two, Rudy's gravity on the pick and roll forces defenders to stay with Rudy, and teams have to pick their poison. If the Jazz keep hitting shots like they did last night, Rudy's going to get those lob attempts. Rudy's going to get more looks at the basket because defenses are going to have to key on the perimeter. But right now, they'd rather take away Rudy and let the Jazz shoot and see if the Jazz can beat themselves, which in that Lakers game, they did beat themselves. Last night, we saw against the Kings, they didn't beat themselves.
And I contribute that Lakers loss just to... I honestly, after seeing Bojan,
hey, whatever you want to call him,
I can say his last name pretty well.
The Bo Jingles show. The Bo
Jingles. But with that Lakers loss, they didn't have Bogdanovich.
Yeah, and that makes a huge difference.
Was lighting it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you take another score away from the Jazz. Of course, they're gonna struggle offensively. Granted, it was more of a turnover thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you get Bogdanovich in there who can actually score, create his own shot, like you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's a different game against the Lakers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at a few more numbers for the Jazz this year.
I'm kind of waiting for Connolly to pop. You know what I'm saying? Like, not like to actually have a show-out game. Maybe yesterday was with 12-8 against the OKC. He only had 5, but also had 5 assists, still facilitated, had a steal. Against the Lakers, he had 13, shot not quite as... you know, as bad as he did against OKC. But, I mean, I'm waiting for those numbers to really go up. I think he's going to find his rhythm soon.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mike Conley is someone who has – I don't want to call him disappointing. I mean, the guy played 12 years in Memphis and ran just a couple systems. Offensively, has never had the creators around him that he does right now and the shooters around him. So it's an adjustment period, and that's absolutely what it is. But you can tell he enjoys playing with his teammates. He, in practice, interviewing him, talking to him, listening to some of his answers and just the way he sees the game. Mike Conley is an incredibly cerebral player. Like, he just thinks the game on a different level, which is part of the reason why he's so good with head coach Quinn Snyder. And the things that Donovan Mitchell has already been able to learn from Conley are huge. On the floor, yeah, it leaves a little bit more to be desired, but he's scored 30 points on the season, averaging 13.2 points per 36 minutes. Really, that's not terrible. His shooting percentage has been pretty bad, but he's got 16 assists on the season. He's averaging 7 assists per 36 minutes. You'll take that every day of the week. Right? Like, if your point guard is going to average, say he does what he did last night. He puts up 12-8 every night and plays good defense. Are Jazz fans going to be happy with that? Would you be happy with that, Tommy?
Yeah. I'd be happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy right now with him. Like, I'm not saying I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just waiting for him to pop. I think those numbers are going to go up. Maybe not his scoring points. But at least his assist points. He has so many weapons around him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least his assists are going to go up this year. Maybe not 10, but I can see him going around 7-8.
Yeah.
In between there.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I have a lot more hope for his scoring than it sounds like you do. I think Conley's easily going to average 15 to 16 points this year. It won't be an issue at all. It's just a matter of finding his footing. He's getting open looks is the nice thing. It's not like he feels like he has to force anything. He's still playing smart, which is something you don't see from everybody in the league. You know, you miss a few shots, and some guys will start to press, and they'll force bad shots because they want to get on the scoreboard. But Mike Conley hasn't done that. He's still more than happy to move the ball, mm-hmm. still plays good defense. He's active on both ends of the floor, whether he's making shots or not. So I've been very happy with him.
Again, I don't want to take what I'm saying is, like, I'm unhappy with him or anything. I think as far as his scoring goes, he doesn't really need to worry about scoring like he did in Memphis. He has so many weapons. Like I said, so many weapons. So that's why I say I don't see his scoring going up that much. He's going to have games where he scores over 20 points. But I also think that I think where he's at right now, his assists are going to go up and his points will go up a little bit. But I think at least three more points in the assist column, or two to three.
2 to 3 more assists per game. Yeah, I could see that. And then, you know, we'll take a quick look at Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell going into his third season, he obviously has made some huge leaps in his progress. Per 36 minutes, he's averaging 26.6 points a game. Mentioned last night against the Kings, he only played 26 minutes, still scored 15 points in that game. He was effective. He hasn't been forcing any shots. He takes over when he needs to. But if you look early in the games, Donovan Mitchell has taken very few shots in the first quarter so far this year. He's let the game come to him, and it's something I love to see. It's a difficult adjustment as a young player to let the game come to you. So 26.6 points per 36 minutes. Almost 7 rebounds per 36 minutes. He's at 6.8, 3.7 assists, 1.9 steals. He had a chase down block on LeBron James in that Lakers game that just shows how Donovan Mitchell never gives up on a play. He's always hustling. He's always working hard. And his teammates love him. You can see that by their play on the floor. You can hear it when I'm talking to him at practice. They just absolutely love playing with Donovan Mitchell, and they think the world of him. And then I wanted to look at one more guy who I've talked to you about, Tommy, I think is the linchpin for this Jazz team reaching their potential this season, Emmanuel Mudiay, backup point guard. Mudiay's been everything I was hoping he could be so far. He's been holding down that backup point guard spot, averaging nearly 20 points per 36 minutes, 19.7 per 36 minutes. If your backup point guard is going to give you 20 points, you know, between basically the minutes he's playing, every two games he's going to score 20 points compared to what the Jazz have had the last few years. That's huge. His size and length on the defensive end have been really nice. You can tell he's working hard. And his ability to get to the basket is probably the second best on the team after Donovan Mitchell, wouldn't you say, Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, he's playing a really good, really strong backup position. I mean, he looks like a stud to me. I mean,
yeah,
he gives you size off the bench at that point guard position. I feel like you can move him from point guard to, you know, possibly two guard, you know, one to two guard. I mean, he hasn't disappointed me yet. I think he pushes that pace once Connelly comes off the bench, get mm-hmm. that pressure off of Donovan, like you were saying, to be the backup.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so far this year in three games, he's scored 34 points. So that's just over 11 points a game. And he's third on the team in scoring right now. So your backup point guard coming in, especially with Mike Conley's early season struggles, Mudiay has been huge. If he can continue to play this well or even close to it, this Jazz team is going to be a juggernaut. They're going to be tough to beat all season. Was there anybody else you wanted to talk about, Tommy?
No, I mean, can't wait for more Jazz games. Like I said, I feel bad that I'm over here talking about Rudy. Like, he only has 2 blocks out of 3 games. But I think this Jazz team is going to be exciting to watch, and I'm happy to be a Jazz fan right now.
So that'll wrap us up on Name Change Pending today. The Jazz are next in action tomorrow night, Monday, at 8 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. They're going to be taking on the Phoenix Suns down in Phoenix. Possibly facing Ricky Rubio. Rubio left last night's game with a knee contusion, was the report. So we'll see what the injury report says as we head into that game. But the Jazz should have an opportunity to go 3-1 on the season, get their first road win. So thanks for joining us, Tommy.
No, thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening to Name Change Pending.